Found is the past tense of to find, but it's the present tense of to found, as in to found a business. Thinking about this made me realize the difference between settlers and immigrants. Settlers found a country. Immigrants merely find one. Speaking of founding a nation, I was reading our new collector's edition bookazine, Trump World. In it, there's an article entitled What Made America Great by Steve Bias. He points out that the United States is not a democracy. He quotes the Federalist Papers, where James Madison wrote, "Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths." Bias then goes on to comment, "If Americans do not even understand what form of government we have, it should come as no surprise that we're having a problem trying to preserve and promote liberty. As we discussed here many times, we have a mixed form of government with elements of the three classical forms, monarchy, aristocracy, and republic. Cicero, in De Republica, said that these governments decay and rot into their mutant variant forms of tyranny, oligarchy, and democracy. To offset that, and to try to get the good parts of each, Cicero suggested a mixed form of government, a hybrid made of all three." See here.
And so Cicero pulls from this a unique view, and because he's a conservative guy, he says a mixed constitution is best. You don't want just a democracy or just an aristocracy or just a king. You want all of them, which is the kind of constitution Rome had. And he understood that there were problems with this, and he wanted reforms. But basically what he said is a republican model that has democratic elements, where the masses have some representation, not too much. An aristocratic element, where the wealthiest, the best people, had most of the power, but had checks and balances. And then in the Roman system, there's the consuls, of which, remember, Cicero himself was one, which was this rotating sort of supreme person, although with very limited powers. This may sound familiar to you. We're about to get to that. And so he argued vociferously that what you do is you avoid the worst of all three systems by using the best of all three systems as checks and balances.
Our founding fathers followed that template and created a presidency based on monarchy, a Senate based on aristocracy, and a House of Representatives based on republic. But here's the thing. It didn't start out like that. According to historian Charles Beard in his Economic Interpretation of the Constitution of the United States, America had a pure republic right after we broke away from England. The federal layer of government consisted of a single branch, a House of Representatives. There was no Senate and no presidency, not even any federal courts. This single branch was set up under the Articles of Confederation. No sooner than we won than we started to see the problems inherent in a pure republic. For one, the states bickered with each other. They set up tariffs to dissuade trade amongst each other. They also refused to help one another if they were attacked. This was on display when land speculators would sell property out west and settlers would go and instantly be killed by Indians. There was no cavalry to protect them, and none of the states thought that it was their responsibility to help these people in these territories. Likewise, because the federal layer of government couldn't collect taxes, they had no money to pay back bonds that were taken out to fund the revolution. So when the bond came to maturity and people came back to redeem them, the Continental Congress stiffed them. They also stiffed soldiers whose pensions never materialized. In addition, merchants complained that when their ships were sent out to sea, pirates would attack them and steal their cargo. There was no navy to defend them. One merchant commented, "We did better under the King of England. At least he protected our ships." Hear George Washington talk about it here.
"Leading American citizens, watching the drift of affairs, were slowly driven to the conclusion that the new ship of state, so proudly launched a few years before, was careening into anarchy. The facts of our peace and independence," wrote a friend of Washington, "do not at present wear so promising an appearance as I had fondly painted in my mind. The prejudices, jealousies, and turbulence of the people at times almost stagger my confidence in our political establishments, and almost occasion me to think that they will show themselves unworthy of the noble prize for which we have contended." Washington himself was profoundly discouraged. On hearing of Shay's rebellion, he exclaimed, "What, gracious God, is man that there should be such inconsistency and perfidiousness in his conduct? It is but the other day that we were shedding our blood to obtain the constitutions under which we now live, constitutions of our own choice and making, and now we are unsheathing our sword to overturn them." The same year he burst out in a lament over the rumors of restoring royal government. "I am told that even respectable characters speak of a monarchical government without horror. From thinking proceeds speaking. Hence to acting is often but a single step. But how irresistible and tremendous! What a triumph for our enemies to verify their predictions! What a triumph for the advocates of despotism to find that we are incapable of governing ourselves!
As they dithered, something that Washington referred to, called Shays' Rebellion, broke out. This started when a bunch of disgruntled soldiers led by Daniel Shays complained about not having been paid. Not only were they broke because of that, but the state they lived in, Massachusetts, started levying burdensome taxes, which when they couldn't pay, saw the state seize their farms. Seeing how well organized Shays and the rest of the soldiers were, and how if they wanted to, they could have started a second revolution, delegates made haste to the Continental Congress to try and remedy the situation. So in September of 1787, they set out to amend the old Articles of Confederation. Instead, they scrapped the document altogether and drafted a new constitution. In this new model, America would no longer be a pure republic. We were to have what Cicero suggested, a mixed form of government. There would be an element of monarchy, with a president who would protect shipping and defend the settlers out west. There would be a House of Representatives who would control the purse strings and look out for the nation's business interests. And of course, the Senate was already there under the Articles of Confederation when delegates convened at the Continental Congress to represent the states. With this new government, the states stopped operating at cross purposes, and the new federal layer of government started paying the pensions of soldiers and making good on bonds to salvage the country's credit. We started defending our borders. Under this model, we would become a beacon of prosperity and a shining example of liberty and stability to the rest of the world. If you want to learn more about our nation and how it became great in the first place, purchase our new bookazine, Trump World. Key in Trump25DN to get free shipping and handling. That's Trump25, D as in Daniel, N as in Natal. As in the first American Revolution, the first step to securing your liberty is freeing your mind. Learn your own history and see how the past is affecting the present. Order a copy of Trump World today at thenewamerican.com.